Hi, my name's Kansas. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you very much to Emily for giving your talk. I know you shouldn't run away because one of the people I'm here with is going to make you speak at a meeting in Oceanside. So you're not going to dodge that bullet. And then I want to thank everybody who came up with me. A friend meet us here from Chula Vista, and we filled up the car, and we had an AA adventure tonight. One of the things that I've always loved about doing is sort of I love to have these people that sort of they said the real first step is shut up and get in the car. That the other steps started to come later on. And shut up and get in the car is one of the best first steps I've ever heard of. If you're here because somebody said that to you tonight, stick close to whoever the hell that was, because they care whether you live or die. And they not only care whether you live or die, but they're willing to chase your ass down and make sure that you get to the place where you might have a shot at this thing. I was born in a manger. I have a sobriety date. It's July 2nd, 1996. I know some of you that I know this is 190 pounds of attraction rather than promotion. I actually got sober when I was 18 years old, so I was really young when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to assure you that nobody thought that I was overreacting by joining Alcoholics Anonymous at 18 years old. Everybody who knew me thought that it was one of the only good decisions I had made for several years when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. They had not seen me make good decisions up to that point. I came in here, same height I am now, 133 pounds. In my first 60 days of sobriety, I gained about 55 pounds, 50 pounds or so, you know, just, and it was because I was so broken. I was so broken. I had walked into an emergency room and I just said, help. You know, I went into this ER because I didn't really know where to go. I knew that I was sick. I knew that I was dying. I didn't know they were going to send me to AA. I had a feeling that they were going to send me to the local free treatment program. I knew about this place because my mom had been picking up boyfriends there like day laborers at Home Depot. She'd been bringing these guys home, man. I thought at the very least I'd get a girlfriend out of the deal. I come in here and I'm just a train wreck, you know. I mean, I had blood coming out of my lungs. I know in East County you guys don't do anything but alcohol, but I did a lot of methamphetamine. I heard that story gets more common the closer you get to Lemon Grove. So that was a lot of what was going on in my life. And I had said I'm never going to drink. My mother had me when she was 16 years old. She had three kids by the time she was 18 years old. We all had different fathers. I mean, it was just sort of this, you know, none of us knew our fathers. I met my father a year sober. I drove to his house in New York, and I knocked on his door and introduced myself to him. An amazing story. I was sharing this with someone the other day. I had a 1962 Ford Falcon. I was working at Baskin-Robbins as the assistant manager. So I had just gotten my paycheck. I was making $5.15, maybe $5.25 an hour. So I was a baller that night. I went to Denny's and had a T-bone. And I couldn't get anybody to eat with me, so I took myself out on the date. And I decided that night that I would go to, you know, that I would do this. And I had been I'd been sitting on his address since I was 15 years old. I had met his mother on a trip back to Rhode Island. I was born back east and then moved out to Kansas and then moved back east when this happened. I remember I was sitting in this halfway house, and I opened up his address one day sitting on the bed, and a hit of LSD fell out of it. And I apparently had gone through rehab with this hit of LSD in my pocket the whole time. But to me, it was like, if you don't do something about this, you know, this is the kind of stuff that'll get you drunk. You know, like we're here to take care of our lives. We're here to fix the things that are wrong in our lives. And this is something where I've got, you know, this needed to be answered for me. So I drove, and my car broke down in Terre Haute, Indiana, where the Andy Griffith show was from. So it was this little podunk town. And this girl who gets stuck behind me on the freeway, she comes up to my car, and I'm trying to start the thing. And she says, "Would you like some help getting this thing out of my damn way?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." And so I push my car off the freeway or over the shoulder of the road, and she offers to give me a ride. She starts taking me down, and we get a few feet away, and I don't know what to do, so I ask her to take me to an AA meeting because that's where the solution is for me. And so she takes me to this AA meeting, and I've never been to a meeting like this before. And this guy is like, they have the crustiest old-timer I've ever seen in my entire life up to this existence. You know that they're crusty when there's a certain smell, and then he had a crooked finger that he pointed at everybody. And it was this meeting where you get to give feedback to the people that are sharing. And so he was just brutalizing all the newcomers in the meeting. And I had never seen a meeting like this before. This is not a format I was familiar with. I've since seen that format. I've seen it done better. But I thought, but this girl had a Captain Morgan t-shirt on. So I was afraid she might be an alcoholic. So I said, I better get her the hell out of here. She's going to think this is what AA is. She won't join us. So I grab her and I get her out of there, and I start explaining to her that's not what Alcoholics Anonymous is like, you know, and da 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 da. So I'm like explaining this to her because I don't want her to die. That's a lead in. I'm like, "Oh yeah, by the way, I forgot my driver's license. Would you mind getting a hotel room in your name so that I can get one? Because I didn't bring my wallet. You know, I just brought this cash." And, you know, because I was a year sober, but I was 19 years old, and that makes you a dipshit anyway. She said, and this is after half of an AA meeting with me, she says, "Well, as long as you got the gas money for me to get home, I'll take you the rest of the way to New York." So from Indiana, the next day, we got in the car, and this girl drove me all the way to New York. How did things like that happen? You know, how did things like that happen? I don't know how they happened. You know, I didn't know what I was going to do when I was hitting bottom. You know, I had all of these things going on, and I'd been in a foster home for 3.5 years. I had just left that foster home, and I had not left well. I had sort of left in the night doing that alcoholic runaway kind of a thing. And, I'm staying in this house where if somebody spills Guinness on the carpet, nobody notices because the carpet looks like crap. You know, it's the kind of place where the laundry never gets done, the dishes never get done. You know, where if the dishes do get done, it happens with a scrape job first. You know, I mean, this was, and all of us were like this in this house. And I was sort of running out of anything to put on the table, and I went back to my mother to try to take the last bit of money that I had, and I was trying to, you know, connect, and she lived in a meth lab. And I go back, and I figure I'm going to do better there than I am anywhere else. And she sent me out. She said, "I'm being watched by the police right now." Sent me out, said, "Come back in an hour, 2 hours." I drive around, and I'm trying to figure out whether I go over to the day labor place, or if I go over to, if I move back to Rhode Island where I haven't burned all my bridges yet. And I saw 15 Easy Does It stickers during that time. I've never seen an Easy Does It sticker in my life. I don't know what the hell Easy Does It is. I just know that they're sparkly and they're bothering me. And I have, and so I asked my mother, I was like, "What the hell does Easy Does It mean?" And you know, my mother and I were drinking buddies, and you know, she says, "Well, you know, she'd been to treatment before," and so she told me about when she went to treatment that they said that in meetings of AA. And so that was a nudge that I took at that time. Family life was in, you know, you sort of get the idea that it was sort of insane for me. And, I'm just going to sort of, you know, I went to 6th grade schools. We were evicted from every house I can remember ever living in. The relationship with my mother, because she was really the parent that I had, I sort of sum up in one story. I think it tells the whole story. I don't think you have to hear anything else. 16 years old, I walk into her house. I have been drinking and not sleeping for days and days and days. I don't use the word outside issues when I talk about drugs. I am an alcoholic because I shake in the morning, and when I start drinking, I can't stop drinking. You don't have to have any other hobbies other than alcohol, but I don't give a shit if you do. When I got sober, we didn't use code language for that. Nobody at this meeting or any other meeting I've been to is handing out secret AA decoder rings, so I try to use plain language to tell my story. But so I, you know, so I end up going to the, you know, I end up going over there. They, you know, the, all of this sort of happens, and I decide that I'm going to go into treatment at this point. And, you know, that was when I had this kid take me to the ER. And, but you know, this, I'm 16 years old, and, you know, I'm on this run, and I decide somehow that I am Jesus Christ. Well, it wasn't really a decision. I was told. I was hallucinating. I know in East County you guys don't ever hallucinate. I was, though, and so this is East County, right? To me, this I keep saying East County. Well, in Oceanside, this is East County. I had to take the 805. So. So I was actually told, and so now I was bothered by this. You know, like, I've been around nut wards, and most people are pretty excited by this news. You know, they want to go out and find other people and recruit them and convert them and do, you know, they've got all this stuff to do. I felt burdened. I was also upset because a couple days prior to this, I had been a staunch atheist. So this sort of revelation that I had wasn't adding up. And speaking of revelations, the way that that happened was when you don't sleep and you drink and you keep doing all this stuff and you read the book of Revelations with a flashlight under a blanket for a couple of days, you start to get some wacky ideas. And this is what happened to me. So I didn't know what to do, so I went and I told my mother. I said, "Mom, I think I might be Jesus Christ." Or if you can imagine your 16-year-old boy saying this, the tears start coming down her face, and she starts to cry, and she says, "I've always wondered if you were." telling you cannot make this stuff up. My first drink was from, I was a thief before I was a drunk, and I was breaking into cars, and I was breaking into houses, and my buddy and I went back, and we took all the booze in this house, and we took it to my house, because my house was a free-for-all, and we started drinking. You know, we started drinking, and I blacked out that night, and I blacked out many nights after, and, you know, there were all these things, you know, it was just like, every time I ever got arrested, it was a drunken night. I mean, I had a lot of hobbies, but it was always a drunken night that I got arrested, you know, it was some idiot says, "I've got an idea," and you know, I mean, and you take, and there's something that happens to young men. You know, the more of us you put together into a group, it doesn't matter. This happens to non-alcoholics too. There's an overall reduction in IQ points that occurs when young men get together. I live in Oceanside, so I watch Marines that are not alcoholics do it all the time. I thought I heard of whatever that noise is that they make. But so, you know, I when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I was a train wreck. There was, you know, there's this guy Kelly sitting in the meeting. I remember the first meeting I'm sitting in, and he takes a 4-year chip. And it was the first meeting they had allowed me to go to, and I remembered how big of a deal it was that morning because they were finally letting me out of detox after 7 days. And they said, "All right, it's been 7 days. You can go start going to some meetings now." And Kelly took a 4-year chip. And I remember I'm sitting there, and I had 7 days in a row. I had a week where I hadn't picked up anything. And I couldn't remember the last time that I'd had a week where I hadn't picked up anything. You know, I didn't have a single high school credit when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I took a GED to get the social workers off my back. You know, while I was in treatment, the court finally terminated my status as a ward of the court. You know, and that was a totally separate thing from my alcoholism. They never caught me for my drinking or any of my other stuff. They caught me for stealing cars and taking them across state lines, which is a federal felony. But, they charged me with 5 felonies when I'm assaulting somebody in their home after macing them. You know? You only laugh if you didn't have to make that amends. It's a tragedy. What are you guys doing laughing at that? That was tragic. This guy was asleep and he got maced and beat up. They're sick at SoCal speakers. not like Oceanside. I end up coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. I see Kelly taking this 4-year chip, and Kelly has I call it a skullet. If you ever go to any Midwest AA, this is a common haircut. They have long hair down the sides. Their skull is completely exposed because they have full-on male pattern baldness. He has big Coke bottle glasses. Every once in a while, they'll do a light comb over you can see through. And Kelly goes, "If you want what I got, you'll do what I do." With all of that sort of Midwest enthusiasm. And the fact was, I did want what Kelly had. You know, the peace in his eyes was accentuated by the Coke bottle glasses. You know, the fact was that I went in and I identified with the other alcoholics in the room. I was laughing with them. I was listening to their stories. I knew that they knew what was wrong with me because it was wrong with them too. You know, I knew. I knew that they knew. You know, it's like they understood emptiness and loneliness and desperation. They understood the kind of this kind of inability to experience contentment on any level or in any form, whether it was because I need another drink or whether it was because I can't figure anything out. You know, they knew what that was. They knew what the look in a, you know, they knew what, when somebody loved them, what it was like when somebody looked them in the eye and they were about to give up on them. You know, when the pain was getting to be too great, it wasn't that they wanted to abandon them, it was that the pain was too damn great. And they were going to have to start taking care of themselves. You know, these people knew that stuff. They knew that stuff, and I knew that stuff. You know, and I hadn't been telling anybody about that stuff. I'd been burying that stuff deep inside me, and it was just burning me up. And when you guys started to talk about that stuff, I started to listen. You know, I knew that you were just like I was. You know, I know there's some of you in here, you ain't anything like us. That's okay. Keep coming back. You know, my story's my story. You know, it is not the only one around here. We got every single kind. I love the idea that there's a wrench to fit every nut in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it's true, you know. We gave a 70 plus year old man a couple year chip at one of my meetings the other day. You know, I come in here and I'm 18 years old. You know, later on in my story, you know, there's a point where I'll tell you about a girl who got sober. She's 13. She's now 12 years sober, and you know, nobody thought she was overreacting either. I'll tell you, you guys ought to have her come down and talk. I'll give you her number. it didn't really matter whether I had alcoholism or not. Was sort of my background. It was, I was going to be a mess in life regardless. You know, I understand when I hear others say that they're grateful for their alcoholism now. It's not just, for me, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's not just a disease. It's not just an illness that I'm walking around with. It's also given me something. It's given me all of you, and it's given me a place that so far I can't get kicked out of, no matter what mistakes I make here. And there have been many. You know, 17 years of sobriety, there have been some big ones, and you guys have all known about them. You know, you guys have all known about them. And what you did, even when you were mad at me, was you let me sit here with our design for living, which is the 12 steps. If you're here, incidentally, and you're not doing the 12 steps in a 12-step program, why are you here? Just a thought. that is the program. That is our program. Meetings are a place for us to find each other, and so the new people can find other people just like them. But what keeps us sober is our 12 steps. You know, it's going through this process. You think you got nothing to give? Go 12-step somebody anyway. That's exactly when you go 12-step somebody. Nothing will so much ensure us immunity against the first drink as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when all other activities fail. Get off your ass and go help somebody. I don't care who you are. Okay? They gave me this thing, like a pedestal to stand on tonight. It's not my fault. I didn't know that that was going to be there. I wouldn't do that if it wasn't for the pedestal. I do the same things that you hear from every single speaker from Emily, who opened up the meeting. With the things we hear from every single speaker, there is no special AA program that you need to figure out. If you have social anxiety, be a greeter. Stay off the frickin' Xanax, okay? It's just alcohol in a pill form. Be a greeter. That's how the hell we got over anxiety before social anxiety became popularized. It's not even a damn diagnosis. I looked it up. It really isn't. It doesn't exist. It's just a bunch of bullshit that somebody has told you when all you really have is alcoholism and you need to stand at the door and freaking greet. That's the answer. Shake other alcoholics' hands and get to know somebody and it goes away. It's simple. But I did the same things. I got commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous. I carry commitments now. You know, I have to get 4 speakers every week for my Saturday night meeting, you know, for a year. We have 4 15-minute speakers every Saturday night at this meeting, and my job is to get 4 speakers every single week. That is something that I'm happy to do. I'm happy to do for the group. That's what the group asked me to do. Next time around, they're probably going to ask me to clean the toilets, and I'm going to be happy to do that. I don't care what it is. At another meeting I go to, I stack the chairs. I'm on the San Diego bid for Icky Pond now. I bring muffins to the meeting. That's my job, is to bring muffins to the meeting, and every once in a while I'll be opinionated. I'm sure you can't imagine me doing that. But I stay active and involved in this stuff, and I was told to do that from the very, very beginning, you know, and it's been general service, it's been young people's groups, it's been all of this sort of stuff. Any way to stay active and serve Alcoholics Anonymous has been a blessing for me. This gave me a place to be. It has gave me a place to sort of, that didn't kick me out, that would let me sort out how to use our program for a living, you know, while I'm figuring it out. You know, it's not about what mistakes you make in here. It's about whether or not we go to enlarge our spiritual lives in response to them. You know, and in my experience, those of us who stay are the ones who everything from our Thursday, our speaker got his first commitment by flashing a gun at the guy who had the commitment. Okay, that was how he got the commitment. You know, it doesn't matter what your mistakes are or what the things are. It's the next step as you try to remedy that mistake to enlarge your spiritual life. And I think those of us that's what it is that we're trying to do, that we resort to this program and try to do that, that's what's happening to us as we get to stay. You know, and other things happen that aren't our mistakes. You know, at 8 years sober, I get a call that my sister had been shot and killed. Her ex-husband walked into her house, shot her through her hand, and it went through. And it was a head gunshot. He did it in front of my 4-year-old niece. He kidnapped her. Amber Alerts. He got caught within 12 hours. She also watched her father commit suicide. This was a month after both grandparents died in the same week. This during this same time, this is in a 6-month period, one of my sponsees, guy who didn't do step 4, put a gun in his mouth, took his own life with an infant child left behind. You know, my former roommate who had the same sobriety date as me, you know, and I look at Mike over here, he remembers all this, he knows when this was happening with me. You know, we found him dead, you know, he was found dead on the couch in his house from DTs. He was in his mid-30s. You know, he's a guy who didn't have DTs every time he drank, but he had DTs that time when he drank, and he didn't recover from it. You know, then 3 months later, my other sister dies in the hospital. You know, this is 6 months this is going on, you know, and there's no... I'd been trying to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous kind of alcoholically at a lot of times, you know, and what I mean by that was, you know, when I had been newer, I had, it was like something would happen, you know, she would break my heart, this would happen, da-da-da-da-da, and I would call my sponsor, and I would expect like an answer right away. I would want to know, what page number do I read? What commitment do I need to get? How many meetings a week do I need to go to? How do I get the Rubik's Cube to make me not have feelings? You know? And the fact was, we had a guy come in and speak, and this guy was sober a long, long time, and he was grumpy, and he was older, and our group didn't like him that night. You should have heard the shit talking session at Denny's that night. But he said what I needed to hear. He said, sometimes when you're in AA, you got to sit still and hurt. And I was in the middle of all this stuff, and I needed to sit still and hurt. I needed to keep doing the exact things that I was doing, because I would stay sober if I kept doing the exact same things that I was doing. But it wasn't going to make it not hurt. My life was in, I was in a painful time of my life at that point. There were some, right after my sister was murdered, this 16-year-old kid at the time, she was 3 years sober at the time, 16-year-old kid comes over to my house, and she don't have any magic words. She's just a member of our fellowship trying to help somebody out. She walks into my apartment, she walks over to my sink, and she starts doing my dishes. She's too nervous to do anything else. But it's 9 years later, and I still don't, I'll never forget it. I will never forget it. She didn't know what the hell else to do. She just knew that her primary purpose was to help an alcoholic who was still suffering. And I was suffering. And this kid came in and did my dishes, and I'll always love her for it. I will always love this kid for it. I've been married and divorced in here. I was divorced because of my own poor behavior in my marriage. That was a couple years ago, and my greatest work right now is around self-forgiveness. That's been the thing that I've been working the hardest on, and the way that I do that, there is no like graduate AA. That doesn't exist here. It's about going back and trying and doing the same things that we do here. It's about going and being of service, calling my sponsor, getting in the book, and working with the guys I sponsor. I'll tell you, I'll call them sometimes. I'll just say, hey, man, my life is falling apart. Tell me you got a problem. I'm like, I need a new guy. It's like the worse I get, the more I need him. Let me go find this new guy to work with. And I've got nothing to give. Bullshit. Because trust me, there's somebody out there sick enough to let you help them. Welcome to AA. None of us are the worst one here. Some really good things have happened along the way too. I kind of talked about mistakes and some tragedies and things like that. But in the meantime, this kid who came in here with an eighth grade education, was awarded his bachelor's degree. Congratulations to the gal who took the birthday that just got hers. I know what that was like to walk for that. Then I got a master's degree. It was like I went out and got, nobody in my family's got an education. Come from this, this New England Irish Catholic family where, a bunch of working class knuckleheads. Everybody's a drunk. My family tree looks like the schematic to a Humvee. It's just riddled with alcoholism and addiction and suicide and murder. And I mean, it's ridiculous. I was destined for misspelled tattoos. Some guy with a Walkman was supposed to be, with a busted up Walkman was supposed to be spelling things wrong on my back somewhere. And Alcoholics Anonymous changed that for me. Instead of that, I've got a house in the hood that's mine. It's a mile from the beach and it's in the barrio, man, but it is mine. I got evicted every year. I went to six grade schools, always the new kid, everywhere that I went. Own my house, got a business. That somebody let me work into with sweat equity. Because they thought that I was doing a good job because of the principles that I brought in here, or that I learned here. Sometimes the material stuff is symbolic of the change. And it can be really difficult sometimes for us to when it's your turn in the barrel and it's your turn at the podium to kind of talk about how the promises look in your life. I remember when I'd moved and I'd gone to live with my father, and then I moved back to Rhode Island and I started living with my grandfather. And grown up without a dad, grown up without any kind of male role model. There was this point where I was coming to California. I came to California when I was 21, and there was this point where he sat me down right before I was leaving, and he looks at me and he says, "You know, when you asked me if you can come stay here, you know, I thought that I was going to be throwing you out in 2 months. You know, I figured you were just going to come here, screw off, do a bunch of different things like that, and I was going to have to kick you out of my house." So, but instead of that, what's actually happened is that I spent the time with you, and I think you're going to be all right, kid. I think you're going to be all right. You know, I had fought everybody and everything all my life, and to have this older guy that I'm related to sit down and tell me that I might be all right, like, I look back on it, and it's this signifier that I was going from this, I was starting to go from being a boy to a man, and that it was going to be okay. You know, and that was one of the, to me, that's what the promises are about in our program. You know, and I've gotten to do amazing things here. I got to be a program chair for a young people's convention a few years ago here in San Diego, and we ended up hosting the largest one, and San Diego got the largest one in 41 years. Of that conference, and we had 2,700 people show up here. You know, we got a better hotel contract than the Roundup did. Just saying. You know, it was something. It was something. You know, how am I going to get to do things like this? You know, I stole a car when I was 15 years old. It was a 1986 Mercury Topaz. My buddy and I watched the IQ points drop, get in the car, and we decide we're going to take it to Florida. We're going to chop it. Neither of us do cocaine. We weren't so into coke, Emily. We were going to go down there, buy cocaine in Florida because we heard it was cheap with all of this, the thousands of dollars we were going to get for this 1986 Mercury Topaz. We were going to turn it into crack and take it back to Kansas and become the kingpins of crack cocaine in Topeka, Kansas. I was arrested in Clearwater, Florida. It was just like to be the kid that I was. You know, it's like breaking into cop cars to steal guns from them to sell to gangbangers. This was one of my business ventures. You know, I was an entrepreneur back then too, just a very different one than I am now. I get to help people in my profession. I get to be with people during very difficult times, and I get to support them. You know, and get to help them through it. All kinds of different human experiences. And because you guys have healed me, sometimes when people are, when I'm in these situations, you know, it's like I heard somebody say one time, they were describing recovering from alcoholism and helping somebody, and they said I go into this cave and I've got this, and I'm not afraid to go in there with you because I have the candle and I can show you the way out because I've found my way out. You know, our book was going to be, that was one of the titles for the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Before they named it Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the titles they considered was, that they nearly settled on was A Way Out. And they looked in the Library of Congress, and there were a lot of other books with that title. And they decided against it for that reason, because they didn't want it to get lost in the shuffle of all of these other books. But, you know, that is what we have here, is A Way Out. You don't have to be as bad off as I was. You don't have to be, you're not too young. You're not too old. You're not the wrong color. We don't care what religion you are. You know, none of it matters. The steps work when we take them. They just work when we take them. You know, take these, and I mean, the only one you got to get right in the beginning is, it's the only one. I remember the moment when I gave up. It was not in sobriety. I was still drinking, and I gave up. I had this clear moment where I accepted powerlessness. But for me, what it was I had given up hope that my life would ever be any different. I gave up hope that it could ever be anything except for exactly what it was. I would always destroy things. I would always be in shame. I would always feel the way that I felt in that moment. And I might as well stop fighting because the hope started to hurt too much. So I gave up. I didn't know that the other answer to it was that somebody like me doesn't have to be sick if he doesn't drink. It's the only step I have to get right. I haven't picked up a drink since doing Alcoholics Anonymous. That is the only step I have to get right. I'm working my way through the rest. I've done my steps many times over, but I'm working through them and figuring out how to put them in my life. In new ways, with new experiences, and with the life that I have all the time. Every minute of every day is about how to, I always turn back to them, and I always have found the answer to whatever it is that I'm in. It's always been there, whatever my life situation is. Sometimes I've gone and gotten outside help when I needed it. And I'm still using those principles to guide me toward that. Those principles are what give me that chance to do that. There's so much to be done here. There are people dying down the street from here that don't even know Alcoholics Anonymous exists. Believe it or not. There are people within, you get on your smartphone and you find a range here, it's going to be around here. There are going to be people that don't even know this exists. We have work to do. We have tons of work to do. Let's not get lazy with this thing. Let's not guard it. And for me, one of the most important things that was ever pointed out to me was that Bill went looking for Bob. Bob didn't come looking for Bill. This idea that I need to wait until you show me just how willing you are to stay sober. I'm so glad that wasn't the message delivered to me. Who the hell am I to decide who gets this message, who doesn't, and who lives and who dies? To me, that's playing God. Bill went out and found Bob because Bill wanted to stay alive. Bill felt like shit, so he went and found another drunk to work with. And Bill's life changed, and it stayed changed, and it continued to change, and it got better. Every one of us has that responsibility. We read it in the Responsibility Pledge. I'm so glad to hear that we have 7 meetings now for the deaf community. I know for a long time the Accessibilities Committee, one of the major goals was so that if you were a deaf alcoholic in San Diego, you could do 90 meetings in 90 days, because you couldn't do that for a long time. Now you can. There is so much work to be done here, and we all have a responsibility to it. My Saturday night meeting is we read Bill the first page of Dr. Bob's story every single week. You talk, it's a bit of a travesty that we talk about the first 164 pages and sort of disregard 2/3 of our book. He says that we carry this message because it's a pleasure, it's a duty, because by doing so I'm taking out more insurance against a slip, and because I'm repaying the debt that I have to the man who carried it to me. For all that I've gotten, no amount of work that I put into this thing could ever repay that debt. Because every time I do, I get repaid tenfold. Every single time. So if you are new or used, get out there and start doing people's dishes, start helping them, and you will get this thing. Thanks.